This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Happy Friday. Welcome into the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems Downtown Studios. Another edition of Sportsnet Today is underway here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Yes, Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie along with you. Hi, J-Mac.
What's good, Logo?
Excited to get back to some Flames hockey this weekend, man.
Yeah, all these... This little layoff after the Monday game to now, a little too long.
It is a weird late season break for the Calgary Flames, but it's full on starting Saturday in Vancouver against the Canucks. Flames are back in action. They're in Vancouver getting set to take on their division rivals before they pop back to Calgary on Sunday to welcome in the Buffalo Sabres. We'll talk all things Flames and Canucks ahead of tomorrow night's matchup. We'll also, on the program today, check in with one of our producers, Shan Vergy, with the latest on March Madness, see what's happening on the court. Plus, Fridays mean another edition of the Friday DMs. We open the show up to you at 960-960 to close out the week. Whatever you want to ask, doesn't have to be sports-related, doesn't have to be Flames-related, anything. You want to ask what Julian's favorite baseball jersey is. You want to ask what?
That's a good question.
Shan's favorite car is. You can do whatever you want. Friday DM's coming up a little bit later, so make sure you get your texts in to 960-960. Also, 2 o'clock, checking in with Stampeders receiver Reggie Bagleton. CFL season creeping up on us, and it's been a busy offseason for Reggie. We'll check in with the Stampeders receiver to kick off our number two. But we're in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems Downtown Studios. Wet basement, they have a lasting solution to keep your basement dry. If you experience any water in your basement, contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. Yes, Cam and Shan, our outstanding producers on this Friday. And the fan feedback line open to you at 960-960. And we open the conversation up, Julian, around the Calgary Flames, a day away from game day and a day away from the beginning, really, of the final stretch of the season. And it comes against a very interesting opponent on Saturday, the Vancouver Canucks. The last time these two teams met, Julian, December 2nd, 2023. And ironically enough, the last time these two teams met, it was the debut of Nikita Zadorov in Vancouver Blue.
I remember that game.
Yes, and now it's the return of Andrei Kuzmenko to Vancouver and our first chance to see Elias Lindholm in Vancouver Blue. He will not return to Calgary. The Canucks don't come to Calgary again this season, so he won't have a return to Calgary with Vancouver unless he possibly re-signs in the offseason, but interesting to note, of course, lots of connections between these two teams. And, you know, the Elias Lindholm trade, I think, still stands as the one that most Flames fans, I guess the Toffoli trade's probably up there. But as far as ones that have happened this year, I think the Lindholm trade still stands as Craig Conroy's probably best piece of work in the minds of the fans and observers of this team. And I'm curious, Hunter Burstavich is now signed with this group.
Yeah.
So that's a worry off of Flames fans' shoulders. And look, Elias Lindholm has not taken off in Vancouver. It's still a very good Canucks team. They're obviously heading to the playoffs. But I'm curious how we look at this Canucks team, Julian, and how we even look back at the trades that they made with Vancouver and Calgary this year.
That's a good question. I wonder if Vancouver still has that same juice that kind of powered them through the first half of the year. If we still look at them the same way, I mean, teams like Winnipeg, obviously, keep it straight to just Canadian teams and their playoff chances. Yes, Vancouver's got the 3 points up on Winnipeg, but I don't know. There's something about this team where it's not necessarily, at least in my eyes, it hasn't performed at that same rate as we've seen them in the first half. I feel like they've kind of cooled off a little bit, or maybe it's just more hype than anything else. But yeah, for a guy like Elias Lindholm to get into that situation and not necessarily play at the level that maybe he would expect to play. I wonder how much of that has to do with the fit, but almost also how much of that has to do with him playing in a contract year. And we're so used to seeing guys in that space kind of ball out. And if you're a fan of that team, you're thinking, oh, man, like how much are we going to pay this guy? Think of like what Sam Reinhardt is doing in Florida right now.
Sure.
Absolutely baller of a performance for him this season. Elias Lindholm, it's felt like the opposite. In Calgary, some lackluster performances, not playing at that same rate that we expected him to. Definitely not the same level that he did in 2021, 2022 when he had Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk on his wings. And the stats have fallen off since, and there's been questions about whether or not he really was that player from that year. And I wonder for Elias Lindholm if he really gets to show that form again at any point in his Vancouver tenure. And when it comes time for him to hit the market, what is that asking price going to be for him? There's a lot of questions swirling around Elias Lindholm, and I'm very intrigued about that, and I'm sure we'll delve into storylines around the game too. But I'll say this to your earlier point about Craig Conroy and the trade that he made for Elias Lindholm. Still surprised that it had happened when it did, but you're absolutely right. It's probably the best trade he's made this season in terms of getting quality and volume out of that deal, getting picks, getting Hunter Pustevich and Yanni Yermo out of that trade too. You get depth for your prospects, and you bolster up your prospect pool. Like for a player that, I mean, people were wondering what the asking price was going to be for that player who was not playing that well in a Calgary shirt. And Craig Conroy found a way to hit a home run, as far as I'm concerned. And I get it. There's time that has to come with this trade. We'll see what happens with Brustevich, but he's had a baller time in the OHL this year. But I don't know. I think on the surface, that's a trade I think Craig Conroy's got won.
Elias Lindholm picked up an assist in Vancouver's win over Montreal on Thursday night. That only brings his point total up to 8 points in 21 games for Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the plan, at least when they acquired him, was to take over that second line center role so that JT Miller and Elias Pettersson could find themselves on the same line. That hasn't worked out, so he's been sort of centering a third line of Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty. And, you know, again, we can have the conversation of when was Elias Lindholm the most successful in Calgary? When he has better wingers. It's been pretty clear that, you know, when he plays with elite talent, he kind of can rise to the occasion. I don't want to say he's playing down to a Mikheyev or a Lafferty. That's not fair to those guys. But I think we've known Elias Lindholm's at his most effective with the better players that he can play with. And if it's not going in that direction and you're, you know, Rick Tocchet, and if it's 8 points in 21 games, yeah, I can't blame you. No wonder you're not playing with Pettersson or Garland or Besser. You're going to need better point totals than that out of a guy that's playing in your top six. And, you know, going back to your point about when the trade happened, Julian, the more that I look at it now and the more that Lindholm's continued kind of his mid-level play this season, what a move by Craig Conroy to do this early.
Yep.
Because how much would it, we kept talking about how his down season might have affected his potential trade return. I can't help but think if that Elias Lindholm continued in with Calgary until the trade deadline, that it might actually have really hurt the return, because everybody would have looked at an even larger sample size and just said, I'm not paying up for that guy on a rental. He's just not having it this season. So, you know, you want to sort of add to it there. I guess that it's, you know, getting him moved out earlier might have helped the Flames' chances in getting that sort of return.
You're absolutely right on that. The fact that it happened around the All-Star break, I know he got that goal before the break, and then everything comes to fruition. Like, I don't want to say masterstroke, but that's really good moves on the part of Craig Conroy. I think he did really well with the timing of it, and it worked out for him. To your earlier point about Lindholm and the line mates, I don't have the full list of line mates he's played with in Vancouver, but the fact that he's kind of bounced around, I think one other thing that needs to be brought up in terms of Lindholm establishing success, he needs that consistency too. Because when you think about his place in the Calgary lineup, yeah, he was that mainstay on that top line, but they tried to make him and Jonathan Huberdeau work, and they put a whole bunch of other different wingers alongside him. And at least in the sample size that I've seen him play in this market, and you can judge off of what we've been able to see in Vancouver, what's been out there with him in Vancouver, I don't get the sense that Elias Lindholm has done all that well with him jumping up on lines and having different wingers and players alongside him. Remember, there was a point last year when Adam Ruzicka may have been the answer along the left-hand side for Elias Lindholm, but that only lasted a short amount of time. The quality of players and the revolving door of wingers to his left and his right plays a role, I think, in why Elias Lindholm has not played at his best. And if he ends up testing the market, I wonder how much that plays a role into a possible destination for him. Can he go to a city? Can he go to a team where he could be fixed on a line, fixed with players that he knows he can play with, and find some stability there?
Even just think about this. If the reports were true, and I have no reason to believe that they weren't, going back to the beginning of this season, how much money has Elias Lindholm left on the table? And how much does he have to have a really strong playoff with the Vancouver Canucks to recoup some of that in the offseason? I was already hesitant to think that he was going to be a guy that picked up big money in the offseason, because he's a, without being rude to Elias Lindholm, he was a number one center here, but I don't know how many traditional, how many other players would you mark him above as far as number one centers?
That's a good question.
I think he's somewhere between 15 to 20-ish range if you're ranking everyone's number one centers, and that's, I'm sorry, that's not a guy that you give 7 or 8 years to at $8 or $9 million. And that was where the Flames apparently were at the beginning of this season.
Remember,
who's paying him $7 or $8 million now?
I would, like, if he gets seven now, that's pretty good for Elias Lindholm. That's pretty good if you're a team signing Elias Lindholm. Like, you're not getting him in. You're right, man. It was just so long ago where 40, Elias Lindholm
40 points in 70 games this year.
Elias Lindholm was at that golf tournament standing in front of all of us saying, "I want to stay in Calgary." And I believe that he wanted to.
Sure.
But, you know, he wanted his money. And I can't blame him. Dude, what, 28, 29 years old? This is probably the best chance he has at getting a big money contract. If he stays in Calgary, he is definitively their number one option at the center position. And he had the 21-22 season in the background, Selke finalist too. I thought from that vantage point, he had a lot of leverage. He just needed his performance to be a lot better than what it ended up being this year. So I would say that when it's all said and done, if he almost signed for $9 million, at most $2 million he's going to lose. I would be
surprised. Per year.
Per year, yeah. At most $2 million per year he's going to lose on that next deal, but I could be wrong. But it's not impossible that he has a strong postseason. There's only one other player I can think of who's had something a little similar, and I mean they're both defensive centers. They could provide offense, but I remember when Philip Deneau was in the final year of his contract with the Montreal Canadiens, and it got out that he had wanted a ton of money for him to re-sign. And throughout that season, that regular season, if you pull up that 2021 year for him, not a great regular season. That's him playing in Montreal. French guy playing in Montreal with all that pressure already there. That is not going to help. What ended up happening is, in the postseason, he was an absolute shutdown defenseman. Dude was going up against some of the best players in the postseason. Remember, that Montreal team went up against Toronto, Winnipeg, and they beat Vegas to go to the Stanley Cup final. And then in the offseason, Montreal still didn't re-sign him, but he ended up signing a six-year deal in L.A., $5.5 million. I get it. Different level of player, different amount of money, but there is an opportunity for Elias Lindholm, whether they put him at center or they just keep him at the wing in Vancouver, for him to kind of just forget about the regular season, just focus on his game, and just play at a high enough level where someone is going to give you that bag. And even for Deneau, the first 3 years of his contract in L.A., there's a no-movement clause. And he's been solid for that Kings team ever since he joined them. So I think if you're Lindholm, fine, you're going to lose out on some money. But if you're able to just finish out the regular season as strong as you can and have a good postseason, you could recoup that money. Even if you have a baller postseason, you could maybe get $7.5-$8 million per on your next contract. But you have to have a really good postseason to do that.
Some of your texts at 960-960 ahead of the Flames and the Canucks Saturday night, which will be the first time the Flames face off against Elias Lindholm since the trade that sent him to Vancouver. Curtis kicks us off with, "Hey guys, Elias Lindholm has shown that Johnny Hockey and Matthew Tkachuk carried him. What a disappointment. Hopefully Kuzmenko turns it around. Be great to have a 40-goal scorer on this team again. Sadly, I don't see it." We'll talk more on Kuzmenko coming up in just a moment here. This text says, "Didn't Julian give a poor grade on his trades? He's contradicting himself."
Whoa. I said that Craig Conroy didn't get enough high-end players. And I if we're thinking of specific trades where I critiqued, I think the Hanifin one, I think I really critiqued. I remember writing that he did well on the Lindholm trade. You can go back in the article catalog. If you want to go on saying that I gave him a poor grade, I didn't give him a full poor grade. I said he needs high-end players, and that's not done yet. There's still time for him to do that, which I also wrote. But let's calm down with that a little bit, okay? And he is the person, I think they said they will take a long time to grade the trade.
Yes.
Absolutely right. That's totally fair. But I mean, give him a poor grade.
Part of the trade will take a long time to grade, but part of it won't. Yeah. Like if Lindholm doesn't improve his numbers and Vancouver doesn't get out of the first round and they don't have the money to re-sign, which I don't think they do, Vancouver lost the trade. I'm sorry. Regardless if Brustevich or Yermo turn into anything, if that turns into a failed rental for Vancouver because that's all they got in the trade, then, yeah, I think it's a pretty easy sell for a Calgary win right now.
Absolutely.
This text says, "Come on, fellas, good players make other players good. What does that say about Lindholm?" This text says, "Looks like Huberto may have been helping boost Lindholm's numbers before he left."
That is the first time. Wait, did I just hear someone suggest that Huberto's numbers were boosting Lindholm? That's obviously the first time I've ever heard that in this city.
This one says,
"Wow, the 180 on Huberto in this market. Wow,
he's been good in 2024.
He's been good in 2024.
Year's been great for
him. Been nearly a point per game player in Huberto.
Damn good.
I'm not saying like wow, he's turned into this all world player, but like he has been good.
I think you wrote about that."
I did write that he need to be better.
No, I thought you wrote that he's an all-world player and the Flames won the trade. I thought I wrote that.
No, I think I think about it because I literally wrote a column about how he it was a dilemma. He needed to be better. And literally since that column, he has been better.
This text says, "Lindholm's been overrated since Tkachuk and Johnny beside him. Outside of that year, he's a 45-point guy his entire career." And this text says, "The morning show's talked that Elias Lindholm is dealing with some type of injury. There's been that word out of Vancouver, but there's been nothing actually confirmed about that. I think Rick Tocchet said he's dealing with something."
Yeah.
But ask most NHLers at this point of the season. Everybody's dealing with something at this point of 70 games in the season. So, yeah. And also goes on to say, "Conroy stated that Lindholm told the club before the season he would not re-sign with the club. Not sure about rumors of Flames offering $8 million+. I don't believe that's...
Here's what I'll say about
I don't
those
believe
rumors.
Lindholm said he wasn't signing with the club.
Yeah, that,
I do
that
believe,
first part, I don't know.
I do believe the Flames were, like, I mean, Pat was all over that. It was past $8 million a year.
I mean, there's the reporting that's done on that story, and there's also common sense. You look at what Elias Lindholm, in terms of contract comparisons, what he probably should have been making, which was around $8.5 million. So thinking like Bo Horvat money, not too far off from Mika Zibanejad money, Dylan Larkin money. Like, that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dialing it back to before the season started here. The fact that there was no deal being done at that point, already in my head, and I think in everyone's head, that should tell everyone that Elias Lindholm wanted north of $8.5 million. And you could have made arguments. I definitely did at that time. You could have made arguments that he was deserving of that money.
For sure.
But right now, it's a good thing the Flames didn't give him that money.
I mean, even thinking about some of the contracts that we thought about that were out there for Lindholm or Hanifin and, you know, the way things could have gone for this team, hindsight's always
20/20
in our advantage in sports radio, but it's an interesting perspective to look at already and one I'm sure we'll revisit at another time. Now, the other side of that trade, as we've talked about, Julian. Now, most of the things that the Flames got, future assets, a first-round draft pick, conditional third-round pick, you know, Joni Yermo, Hunter Burstavich, exciting things, but unknown pieces, no doubt. The one piece the Flames did get back, and look, to make the money work in all of this without salary retention, was Andre Kuzmenko, and it was a good start for Andre Kuzmenko. He's up to 8 points in 15 games with the Flames. He's got 5 goals and 3 assists. I think still fair to say that this is a guy wanting more. The Flames would like more from offensively on a consistent basis. He's at 29 points on the season as a whole. It's a long way away from a guy that flirted with 40 last season. But how do you sort of evaluate Andre Kuzmenko's time as a Flame and where this is going between he and the organization?
Andre Kuzmenko strikes me as a guy who, if you put him in a purely offensive situation, he can thrive. You think of that 1 year he had in Vancouver, where he spent a chunk of that time with Bruce Boudreau, who is known to let his offensive guys be offensive guys. Yeah, 39 goals, 74 points in that year. Rick Tocchet comes in. He is all about making sure the finer details are done and the fundamentals and all that. Like, he's trying to get his team to play a team game. And even here in Calgary, where Ryan Huska, one of the first things he said is that he wanted him to commit to playing a team game. Remember when they put him on that line with Jonathan Huberdeau and Yegor Sharangovich? And I think there's some adjusting for Andre to do in terms of playing a complete game. He strikes me as a guy who, if you're just going to let him do his thing in the offensive zone, if you're going to let him just be the skill guy, the offensive guy, work around the net, no problem. But in terms of the defensive side, which this team, this Flames team wants guys who can commit to playing well at both ends. Even Jonathan Huberdeau, it took him time to adjust to that. But you're seeing him try to backcheck. You're seeing him trying to be more physical. Like, he's got that at least a lot more down than he did at the beginning of his tenure here. For Kuzmenko, he needs more time with that, or he needs to figure out how to adjust to that system. He is still, I mean, at least when he has produced for this team, it's come in some good moments, and at least with the way he's dealt with us, like, it's been a bit endearing. But I mean, yeah, definitely wanting a little bit more from an offensive standpoint, and considering how Ryan Huska is building this team and what he wants out of his players, I think there's more needed for Andre in terms of playing that team game that Ryan wants.
Is this a guy that you see with the team next year? Is he a guy that they move in the offseason? Where do you kind of come down on that? Is he going to be a long-term piece here in Calgary? He's just 28, so I don't want to rule out the fact that there's no future for him here in Calgary. But I'm curious where we sit on this, because there is still a year left on that contract at $5.5 million. And for some, maybe, you know, a guy that's 28 years old doesn't fit in the window of this team.
It's a good question. I think the thing about Andre, though, is that I think in terms of skill in that offense, he has something that the Flames really need. When he is on, and when he is able to get those goals, like, you see flashes of a potential game breaker. But again, in the system that he's in, I don't know if that could be fully realized, right? Especially if you're putting him in bottom six roles, that's not him. Like, you need him in a top six role in order for him to really play well. I don't know. I think that if you are going to move on from him, then I think you have to do something to kind of offset that, because I don't know if you watch this guy in warm-up, man, but like, he just, the skill that he possesses. He's got a ton of skill. He might be the greatest warm-up player I've ever seen in terms of the skill that he possesses. But if it's not translating for this club and the style that they want to play, do you look into the offseason and figure out who might be willing to take on this player with 1 year left on the deal and see what you can get for him out there? I wonder.
Honestly,
and you make another move elsewhere to get a similar type of player who might be better at both ends of the ice but could still provide that skill, and that's not easy to do either.
Honestly, given where the team is going and where I think they're going to be at next year, and the fact that they've opened up so much cap space, the cap is going up. I think I've seen flashes, and I think we know you scored 39 in this league before.
Yes.
I think we know there's that offensive potential. If the Flames were to keep a guy like Kuzmenko around into next season and say, look, we're going to hope the power plays in a better place, we're going to hope that we've got a more settled spot for you in the top six, and try to build his trade value towards a deadline move next year,
yep,
I'd have no problem for
that's
that.
That's fine.
The $5.5 million really doesn't bother me getting into next year. It's,
nope.
It's a, to me, it's a low risk, high reward possibility. If he gets back to scoring goals and a contender comes around and is willing to pay something for him that you can add to your list of assets from the Vancouver Canucks, then that's perfectly fine. And if he walks away for nothing at the end of it because he just never figured it out in Calgary, again, you weren't in a contending...
I don't know about that last part. You had me until that last part. I don't agree with that.
No, I guess what I should say is I would expect the Flames to, obviously, given Craig Conroy's mantra, to try to maximize any assets for it.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying if it, you know, if at the end of the day that's what it was because he never got back to scoring goals on a consistent basis,
I get that. I think if you're the Flames, though, if you're going to commit to the player, if you think that he could be somebody who can fetch you assets down the road, you look at the 2025 trade deadline. And if he happens to be playing really well and the team's still not in a great place, and as you mentioned, if a contending team decides to pick up the phone, and hey, maybe if that market dictates itself in a certain way, you get yourself a high draft pick. A high draft pick. Sorry, my English today. Jeez. Look, I think if you're Craig Conroy and you're retooling right now, getting assets to build a contending team, that's got to be at the top of your list of priorities. And if Kuzmenko can do that for you, you do it. So I look at the, you're right. I think the 2025 deadline, I know I mentioned the offseason, that could work if you want to go there. But it's not as if
you're selling low.
Yeah. You're also not in a rush to do that. You can
you've got the cap space. You don't need
absolutely.
You're not begging somebody to take the money off of your hands. You're still going to be in tons of cap space.
Yep.
Even with this guy on your roster. Yep. So Flames and Canucks hockey night in Canada Saturday night. Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov facing their old team. Andrei Kuzmenko's return to Vancouver. 8 o'clock puck drop right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. That means Pat Steinberg has your warm-up at 7. Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson on the call right here on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960. We'll take a break, come back on the other side, get a March Madness update. Brackets have been busted just 24 hours into March Madness, plus a look at the NHL schedule with 4 games on the docket tonight. Logan Gordon, Julian McKenzie along with you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Logo and J-Mac along with you on this Friday edition of Sportsnet Today. We've covered all things Flames Canucks coming up on Saturday. Flames hockey finally back after a 4-day hiatus.
Way too long.
It is too long at this time of the year.
What do you do when the schedule, like how often do we get a schedule like that? Well, I mean, beyond the 1 week off, but like, what do you do to kill that time beyond obviously your job?
Personally, I just torment Shan.
I can confirm.
Just spend a lot of time.
You just spend a whole week just tormenting him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any way, shape, or form that I can.
A lot of texts that I get at like 1:30 in the morning that are just, I can't repeat.
Trying to disrupt his sleep schedule as much as possible.
I feel like there's so many other things you could be doing with your time.
Oh, absolutely. I could be bettering myself.
Yeah, you should.
I could.
I mean, I'm trying that too. But
I could try to socialize. In a proper manner. There's a lot of things I could be doing.
In a proper manner.
There's a lot of, you ever let's
tried,
be honest.
You ever tried getting to know people in a regular way?
No. It's a major problem.
Do you consider yourself antisocial?
It depends on the person.
That's fair. I feel very privileged that
sometimes
you allow me into your circle.
Well, you can come in the circle anytime you want. Chan, not so much.
I know. That's been made clear.
Still to
You're
come.
Just gonna take that shit? Jeez.
It's
Stand up for yourself.
First day I met Logan, he said, "Shen, I am your supreme leader. Do not mess with me."
Nah, like, yes, bro, sir. You gotta stand up.
George said that.
That was also a George thing. Oh. That's why I got you and George confused off the bat, and I was like, "Oh, they're two different people."
Both call ourselves the sheriff.
Yes.
Spend a lot of time in Ontario, so. Makes sense why you would confuse us.
Yeah, very easy to spot.
Hour two, we'll chat with Stampeders receiver Reggie Begelton. CFL season inching closer. Reggie's been busy this offseason with some special projects with the CFL and World Vision. So we'll chat with Reggie coming up to kick off hour two. Plus the Friday DMs. If you got questions you want answered, 960-960. I saw some of them start to come in hour one. You can get them in early at 960-960. If you'd like to, if you're going to be busy, you don't want to forget your question, anything and everything open to you on the Friday DMs. Shan will read those out coming up a little later on in hour two. But right now, we're busy with Shan giving us an update on all the latest happenings in March Madness, the tournament well underway. And Shan, last night, one of the biggest upsets of the tournament. Very few perfect brackets remain, sir.
Yes, we're actually under 1,000 perfect brackets after the first game today. It's what they do. The first game yesterday is an 8-9. First game today is an 8-9. It's essentially a 50-50 split, so you cut the brackets right in half. But, yeah, the big upset we're talking about is Oakland over Kentucky, and that is not Oakland, California. That's Oakland in Michigan, which didn't know that was a thing.
I did not know there's that was a thing Oaklands? Until after the 8.
Yeah, there's two Oaklands. I didn't know either. They're a 14 seed, and they beat Kentucky, the 3 seed. I think Coach... Calipari, he might be in a little bit of trouble, but yeah, this Oakland team led by essentially one guy, Jack Golkey. He looks like he has a mortgage. He looks like he has three kids. What's wrong with that?
He's got his life together in his 20s.
No,
I don't know what his life is like.
He's in university. That's the crazy thing. And this guy,
it happens. People have kids, and it's possible.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying, like, he looks like he's 42. Now.
That guy, like, because he made the point about how, like, those guys in Kentucky, there's a lot of NBA talent there, yeah. And he could say he could play with them. That guy, he could end up being some, like, hedge fund manager into his 40s, and he'll see some of these guys in the league and be like, I cooked him that one game.
Yeah, he'll be telling his kids that he already has. Like, I cooked them, man. But he said, I'm not an NBA talent, but this is exactly the kind of guy that the Miami Heat look for.
So. Yeah, I knew you were going to make that joke.
Dude,
I knew you were going to make that joke.
He might be on that roster playing 15, 16 minutes next year, but... He shot 8 non-3-pointers in the regular season this year. He shot 0 in the game yesterday. He went 10 for 20 from 3. That's absurd.
He didn't dribble that much either.
No, he's just catch and shoot. And he's not just like catch and open shoot. Like he looks like Klay Thompson out there. Anyways, that was the big story of yesterday. Let's move on to today. Like I said, 8-9 split to start the game. Started off hot. Northwestern versus Florida Atlantic University. Remember, FAU last year had that. Pretty incredible run, almost made it to the finals. Tried to play hero ball at the end of the game. Northwestern tied it up with 8 seconds left. Jonell Davis tried to take that hero three, could have driven. FAU ended up losing. They had nothing going in overtime. So the 9 seed, Northwestern, they took it. Second game of the day, Baylor, number 3 seed against Colgate. They had their way with Colgate. You could say that they brushed their teeth with Colgate today. 92-67.
All right, stop. No. We're done doing March Madness.
I thought about that one. I was like, I don't know.
Cam, do you have the Price is Right losing noise? Because, yeah.
Are you just within smacking distance of your co-producer?
That was really bad.
I still will make that joke any day. I quite like that. Anyways, we got some tight games going on right now. University of Alabama.
So much better than Crest. It was Colgate.
See, like,
from Shan.
See, something like that could have been good, too. But, like, they brushed their teeth with Cole. I thought that's not bad. Anyways.
It wasn't good.
Okay, listen, we got a couple games in the second half right now.
What is going on
UAB.
Here?
This is how it goes. UAB versus San Diego State University. That's a 5 versus a 12 seed. San Diego State, the 5 seed, only up 3 right now. There's 4 minutes left in that game. Just went on an 8-2 run. This is a big one. Marquette, the 2 seed, taking on Western Kentucky. They're the 15th seed. It's just a 6-point game. We got 10 minutes left in the second half. Marquette, I'm going to say it, they're a fraudulent 2 seed. I don't think they're going to go very far. Anyways, the last game that's live right now is Clemson against University of New Mexico. That one's not close. 32-15 Clemson on a 21-6 run. And I just lied. There is another game on UConn Stetson. This one, don't even bother watching. It is not worth your time. UConn's way too good. It's 21-4 right now, and that is not going to change. So, those are the games that are live right now. Now, one thing I have to mention, Bijan Robinson, the Atlanta Falcons running back,
okay,
has a perfect bracket at the moment.
He really?
One of the 900 people. Yeah.
No
he's,
way.
He's got a perfect bracket. Now, this game that I talked about, Western Kentucky over Marquette, he has Western Kentucky. Now, just a six-point game, so he certainly has a chance. But, yeah, Bijan Robinson, one of the very few people in the world to have a perfect bracket. So, that's something everyone's really tracking. I think March Madness, especially all their socials, they are milking that right now. It's been a fun tournament
wow.
so far. Yeah, there's like brackets are getting destroyed. I forgot to say bracket busted a lot. I probably should have done that. But yeah, it's been, I mean, like it is every year, but we're at the point where we're like 0.00153% of brackets are still intact. I believe that's the number. So, it was 1800, after yesterday and cut it in half today. So yeah, it's been like this, man. It's been a fun tournament.
Bijan Robinson, apparently.
That's awesome.
There are 60 perfect brackets remaining in the world.
60
is just one of them.
I believe March Madness, they put up a Bijan watch tracker.
Yeah.
So they looked at all the different matchups. And yes, you're right. The Western Kentucky matchup is one that he picked. But he did also pick Duke to beat Vermont, Colorado to beat Florida. Purdue over Grambling, Utah State to lose to TCU, Wisconsin over James Madison. I'm trying to think of if there's any other upsets.
Well, you have to think about all the upsets.
GCU, wow, Grand Canyon University over number 5 St. Mary's.
And bracket buster.
I like St. Mary's. So I don't know.
Wow. I'm not saying that's one pick he made. Like, wow, that's
bracket busted.
This is my favorite part about March Madness. I make a group every year.
Yes.
And there's this one girl from my high school. I started this in grade 9 for all the basketball guys, and she forced her way in there. She doesn't know anything about basketball. She is the only 2-time champion, and she is in the top 0.1% of brackets in the world. She's leading my group again. She texted me last night. She's like, just laughing, and then said, oh, you're doing better than last year. But this happens every year. And then who's in second this year? She asked me, what is March Madness? It happens every year. I'm fascinated. The girl who's won it twice, she picked prettiest jerseys and cutest mascots.
That's how it goes, though, man. There are people who literally pick teams off of vibes.
I know.
I did logos one year, and I won a bracket.
That must have been so cool.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun.
It's just how it goes. Like, it's my favorite time of the year. I love basketball, played it for a long time, and I get my butt kicked every year. And it makes me angry, and then I'm like, whatever, everyone's having fun. Like, I'm not going to win.
Why would you get angry about making a bracket? Like, you know, no. Within the first weekend,
Shen
you're going
so
to lose.
Few things going on.
It's true. This is my
no
one
way.
Thing. Like, Julian, this is my one thing that I have.
You're right.
In
you
my
see,
life.
Yesterday you said this is your Christmas.
No, this is the best time of the year for me. I'm not joking.
So, like, NHL playoffs,
this
the
is
Masters.
Yeah. This the only tournament I think is better than this is the World Cup.
I like that I can go... Bracket busted.
The World Cup of soccer, the men's edition. I mean, the women's edition.
Football.
Great too.
It's football.
Yes. Okay. If we want to be purists about it, we can say football.
Yeah.
But that is also a cool time too, depending on the matchups and who's playing and the crazy stuff you see in those games.
I'm not joking. I watched at least a part of every single World Cup game this past year. It was incredible.
Yeah, that was fun. The fact that it was in November, too, was still kind of weird. I don't know if I want to see that again, but...
Yeah, that was weird.
That was weird.
But listen, March Madness is the best time. It is better basketball than the NBA, period. I will debate this to no end. It is...
Better basketball than the NBA?
Yeah, it is.
March Madness?
It's system versus system, rather than you've got one or two guys that just play iso ball the whole time, and then if you get stuck, you just kick it out for three. This is system versus system, and that's why you have so many upsets, is that... Some teams can't play well against a certain system. It's just, I love seeing a team like Western Kentucky. Like we saw FAU last year. They were a nobody team. Never even heard of them. Almost made it to the finals. It happens every year. Remember Loyola Chicago?
No.
No? What do you mean no?
They went pretty far last
yes,
year.
I remember.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Doug.
I just wanted to put this out there. I'm a big betting guy. I'm not forcing betting on you. This is just interesting.
Yeah.
Bleacher Report betting has that if you put a $10 parlay on all of Bijan Robinson's bracket picks yesterday, you would have won yourself $46,312.
Jeez.
Off yeesh. A $10 bet.
Jeez.
Not what bad. Are we doing? Why are we not getting in on that?
I remember seeing Bijan Robinson's bracket when it came out. They posted all the celebrity brackets before they came out.
Yeah.
And I looked at that. I was like, what is this guy doing? Like Oakland? What is Oakland going to? And they win. It, all these teams. Like there were so many upsets yesterday, and he picked them all. It's just, so yeah, I guess like you parlay 16 games together, it kind of checks out. It's still nuts, though.
Thank you, Shan.
Hey, thanks. This is my favorite time of the year. I'm glad I get to do this. Bracket busted. Thanks.
It's a great sound. It's a great sound.
I didn't know if he was going to end there, if he was just going to go the whole time. I was tempted to let him, but...
We were considering using that sound as a splitter for Flamestock.
Should probably move on.
Yeah, probably.
Four games in the NHL schedule tonight. Sportsnet's got a doubleheader of action for you. Starting at 5 o'clock, Julian, how about the Carolina Hurricanes and the Washington Capitals battling things out in the Eastern Conference? The Penguins and the Stars go at 6 o'clock. That could be a beatdown. Pittsburgh has been awful pretty much all season long, but the post-trade deadline slide, no good. Speaking of blowouts, Avalanche host the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. That's a 7 o'clock start, and the back half of the Sportsnet doubleheader is an 8 o'clock puck drop in Arizona, where Gary Bettman will not let them ever leave, ever, even if they have to play outside on ice in the desert. The Seattle Kraken are in town, going to Mullet Arena to take on the Coyotes.
Man, that arena situation in Arizona where ownership, they have to bid on this plot of land in Northeast Phoenix. I think that's where it is. Like,
I just had this rant the other day when I'm totally with you.
Tell me. I want to hear what you got to say about
it. I don't know. It just feels like they get a pat. Like, I mean, they haven't even won the land yet. Like, they haven't even won the land yet, Julian. And then they got to build the thing. Like,
yep.
You're going to be 5 years out, 4 or 5 years out, still at Mullet Arena. Like, the other 31 owners are cool with that. I have no idea how this obsession with Gary Bettman just continues and why he would have any faith in the ownership group in Arizona to actually get this done is beyond me.
For me, it's... So, like, I have no problem with the NHL realizing, okay, you know what? We want to grow the game and we want to have it in more of these untapped U.S. markets. What I don't understand, while I do get in one degree you want to keep it in Arizona as long as you can and kind of tap into that market, Salt Lake City, Utah, like, they're there. They're knocking on the door and they're saying, hey, like, we can have this team. Like, we have the infrastructure. We just saw, from last week, Atlanta, that group led by Anson Carter, like, they're looking to build something. There are spots in the States that are at the ready if Arizona should fall. So why is Gary Bettman and the league, like, why are they still continuing this? And even when they said at the meetings earlier this week that it might be a little too late to move them out of Arizona for next season, say that whole land thing doesn't work out, like, really? You'd rather them play at Mullet? Like, I think I've been to Mullet. I don't know if you ever been to Mullet Arena.
No.
It's this weird novelty rink where, you know, if a team had to play there for a season, you could say, okay, it was kind of a funny thing. Seeing a team play there for 5 years until their real arena's done, might as well just move back to Glendale. Might as well move back to that old arena you were at.
Well, they didn't want you back because you didn't pay your bills.
Well, yeah, that's true. You know, and we're all about that over here. But yeah, even that Matashibia guy who owns the Phoenix Suns, who was interested at some point. I'm not sure if that interest is there anymore, though. It's just too weird of a situation with the Coyotes, and they need to get that fixed. I would love to see it resolved. I would love to see hockey thrive again in Arizona. I mean, a guy like Austin Matthews came up and watched the Coyotes, helped foster his interest in the sport, and now he's one of the best players in the league. I totally see why some of these markets, the league should try their hand at making hockey work there. But with so many other markets in the States that are at the ready for a team, we haven't even gotten into a Quebec City or a Hamilton or anywhere else in Canada that would want another team. Like, it just doesn't make sense to kind of keep this going.
Well, I don't know why I just don't even understand this league talking about expansion until Arizona's fixed. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you've got 32 teams, and you better make sure all 32 of those teams are in good shape financially and are viable going forward before you look to go to 33 or 34 teams and, you know, dilute the product down even more. I can't believe we're still having, and they're so strong-headed about it. Maybe behind closed doors, it's a different conversation, and maybe Gary Bettman and John Daly are, or Bill Daly, excuse me. John Daly would be interesting.
John Daly running the league? Yeah, they're definitely staying in Arizona. They're not leaving.
Cigars and Diet Cokes. Oh, yeah. Glendale.
All the golf you can do over there, they're not leaving Arizona. That's impossible.
Maybe they're more serious behind closed doors. But man, does it ever just irk me to hear them, you know, in Florida at the GM meetings, go, yeah, we're not going to move them. Everything's fine. They're going to get it fixed. You're talking about a land auction that they haven't even won yet.
And they have to let other people bid on it too.
Exactly. They're not the only ones. There's no guarantee they win that.
How is that going to look when Arizona, if Arizona doesn't win that? How is that going to look?
Ugh. They've sold everything else to us, so I guess why would they change it now? We'll see. For now, they're still in Mullet Arena, and they'll be the site of tonight's matchup with the Seattle Kraken, two teams not making the playoffs this year in the West. Seattle's fighting, but
really? Nah, I mean, look.
They're further back than Calgary. They're 3 points behind Calgary. So
they tried. You mentioned the Colorado-Columbus game in terms of potential blowouts here. Colorado on a 7-game winning streak.
And that's pretty good.
And I don't know if you see the point totals up in the Central Division. Winnipeg, Colorado, and Dallas all tied at 93 points. Winnipeg and Colorado at 674 in terms of points percentage. They're slightly better than the Dallas Stars. They both have more regulation. They both have more regulation wins than Dallas.
It's a crazy division. That 2-3 matchup is going to be insane. Ooh. Regardless of who it is, it's going to be so good.
Goodness. Look, I get it. Like, we're based out west, so we're going to be focusing on the West a little bit more. But I think the Western Conference postseason, that's going to be fun. There's going to be so many fun matchups.
He's Julian McKenzie. I'm Logan Gordon. This is Sportsnet Today. We're live on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take a break. Come back on the other side to kick off hour two of the conversation with Calgary Stampeders receiver Reggie Begelton and close out the week with another edition of Friday DMs. All of that when we return here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.